we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
My name is Allison Cole, and I am here introducing the Animal Voices show for you. This is Animal Voices Radio, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO, on unceded and ancestral Tsleil-Waututh, Musqueam, and Squamish territories in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, March the 29th, 2024. As I mentioned, I am your co-host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Jen Dobell.
Hello.
Hi, Jen. Welcome to the show. So, Jen, tell us, what is coming up on today's program in the next hour?
We have a roundtable discussion. There are four of us here today, and Allison and I are both longtime vegans and activists. We also have Michael Cawson here, who's also a longtime Vancouver-based animal activist. And then we have a new vegan, Daniel Lee, who has been vegan since October. And so what we're going to do is just start with going around the table here with a brief introduction. Everybody's going to talk a little bit about themselves and how they came to this vegan journey. And Daniel, let's start with you.
Sure. Yes. So my name is Daniel, and I work as a hardware engineer. I became a vegan back in October after a certain vegan asked me if I could truly love animals while still eating them. And about a month after that, I just became a vegan after some self-reflection.
So who was that vegan that challenged you?
It was you.
And what were the circumstances?
I was getting a massage, and then I got asked about animal rights. And it's been up and up for me since then.
Yeah. So you've given me permission to mention that I am your RMT. And we did get into a discussion about the ethics around consuming animals and their secretions and using products made from their bodies or tested on their bodies. And you always ask me a lot of really intelligent questions. And it didn't feel like it was in such a way that you were just trying to find an argument for everything I said. You were truly wanting to learn. And I really appreciated that. And I remember at one point I said to you, I don't say this to many people, but I feel that you have a role as a leader in the activist movement. And you've proven that since October. You have delved into the research on the dairy industry to the point that it makes you very angry. And that's exactly how we all feel when we learn the truth. You and I were driving here today, and we talked about how we used to think that cows were just full of milk. We didn't know what happened to make them full of milk. So we're going to get into that later on in the show. But thank you for introducing yourself. And then we've got Michael Cawson here. Let's have your introduction on your vegan journey and your role in activism.
Yeah, my family, we always had pets growing up, cats, dogs, hamsters, guinea pigs, etc. And I saw a few websites, but I just realized I wouldn't do anything to hurt them. Why should it be any different for animals that I can't see? And that's why I went through various stages of vegetarianism, which I now know means very little. It wasn't until about 2016 when a friend of mine said, hey, I'm going vegan, will you go vegan with me? And I said, yeah, I would, but you know, I'm worried about getting enough B12. And she said, well, they have B12 in pills now. And it, for me, it was really that easy. That was the last thing. And I said, okay, yeah, I'm vegan now. And it's been that way ever since. A little bit about me. I have a master's degree in nuclear physics. Right now I spend my time at a job making software for industrial inspections. But I'm also, I've been very active in animal rights. I've just gotten more and more involved in it as time has gone on since I've become vegan. I'm currently the organizer, one of two organizers of the Anonymous for the Voiceless chapter here in Vancouver.
And can you tell our listeners what Anonymous for the Voiceless does?
Yeah, if you live in Vancouver, you have probably seen us holding up pretty big TV screens showing some pretty horrible things. what we're actually showing is stuff that is happening right now all over the world in every single country. Actually, right here in Vancouver, there's a slaughterhouse right by where this studio is. And I realized that what we show might be distressing, but it is something that is happening. And by showing it, we hope to be part of the process of stopping it. Anonymous for the Voiceless is something that any vegan who is dedicated to explaining the reality of the situation is welcome to join. And we hope that you do join it, because last summer was very busy and this summer will be even better in that regard.
And I just want to say that Michael is one of my favorite activists. I'm very picky when it comes to strategy. And Michael is someone who I call in to finish a discussion with somebody when I'm ready to smack my head against the wall from having the conversation with them that's going nowhere. He is patient. He's logical. He has funny comebacks to common retorts that we tend to hear a lot. And I think you are a real asset to the animal rights community. Michael has done a lot of speaking engagements, including at events that I've hosted where we have a film screening showing what is legally done to animals and how horrific it is. And Michael comes well prepared with all kinds of stats on the environmental cost of producing animals, turning them into food, or just information on what's done to them and how we can transition. And also, speaking of activists, we've got Allison, who's waiting here to give her introduction. Give us a little story on how you became vegan.
Well, I always say that I started to make that journey when I started to think for myself, which was when I became a teenager. So age 15 years old, I'm starting to think. I was the head of our environmental club in high school, so always doing lots of activities and actions that had to do overall with environmentalism and environmental advocacy. And of course, with that comes eating lower on the food chain, comes eating no meat. Back in those days, we didn't really know what veganism was. I certainly didn't. So I remember thinking back then when I was starting to come to these revelations of where our food comes from and that I care about animals and I didn't want to be a part of that, I just remembered thinking, when I move out of the house, because my mom won't agree to not cooking meat for me.
That's common.
That was my thought back then. But all these years later, she's a vegan cook now. So,
yeah.
But thinking, yeah, as soon as I moved to university, age 17, I'm going to stop eating animals. And I did that immediately, thinking I needed to wean down. And so cutting down like within the first month. But then after like into the second month, I was thinking, yeah, I don't need to eat animals once a week. I can just stop eating. And then officially my vegan or vegetarian anniversary, it was July or January 1st, 2024. So this year I'm 30 years.
Wow.
No animals. And then moving on to veganism, I was in the role of the office manager at our local organization, Earth Safe Canada.
I love Earth Safe.
They are a vegan organization. We used to do a lot of outreach and education in the community back then. They still do. And that was, you know, it's a vegan organization. We have three prongs of, veganism. There is compassionate, ethical reasons, environmental reasons, and health reasons. And that's what that organization educated on through various forms. So I got educated really quickly and became vegan because it was a logical thing to do. I didn't know about dairy or eggs before. That was about, that was a long time ago. I think you were asking me, I think it's been about 17 kind of more, at least years or more. So that's me.
You're amazing.
Haven't looked back, never will. This is a lifestyle and it's the best choice I ever made.
Yes, there's a common phrase that we say, you don't stop being vegan, and if you did, you never were vegan in the first place. You were a plant-based eater, right?
It's really an ethical decision about your moral-based values.
Yeah.
And it's not just a diet, it extends. And the thing is when you stop eating animals, I find that you know, the heart is expandable muscle of compassion, and your compassion keeps growing and growing, and your awareness too, right? You're mm-hmm. opened up to some issues like, oh, dairy and eggs. Oh, what about the shoes I'm wearing? You know, where does that come from? We've talked about leather on the show before. What about the makeup I'm wearing? What mm-hmm. about the cleaning products I'm using?
My feather duvet on my bed.
You still have that?
Yeah. No, I mean, okay. I'm just, this is yeah. the thoughts that went yeah. through my head when I made that transition. I got rid of it. I got rid of the leather
right.
boots. I got rid of the makeup that was tested on the animals and the household cleaning products that I knew came from places where animals were kept in cages and they were tested on.
And these days, it's actually quite easy. It's quite easy to have the vegan plant-based versions of all those things because they exist. And I've talked about before, back in the day, I was switching to soy milk, and the only soy milk we had was the Chinese soy milk that tasted really beany, right? Mm-hmm. And now, go into a store. You know, I've heard the statistic, like there's over 70 types of soy milk, but that was a couple of years ago. I bet it's more now. Mm-hmm. I bet it's more. And I had oat milk ice cream for the first time last week. That was delicious.
Was that at To Live For Bakery?
No, it was from, I went to a vegan potluck and our host bought that as well as a birthday funfetti cake from To Live For.
Oh, wow.
Bakery.
That's in my neighborhood. Check out
really
To Live
spoiled.
For, everybody.
Yeah.
It's at Nanaimo and Grant.
You can actually just go there and they have cakes that you can just pick up, and they're I think they're quite decadent. That was a real treat. We had two types of ice cream, coconut ice cream and oat milk ice cream, and I indulged.
It tastes identical. You'd never know the difference. And the cows don't have to die. And so finishing our introduction here, my name is Jen Dobell. I've been with the Animal Voices show since about, I think, 2017, Allison, would you say?
I think that's correct.
Okay,
yeah.
I've been vegan since about 2014 or 2015. I was on a break from work years ago, and I was waiting to cross the street, and I saw a sign on a lamppost advertising an event called Empty the Tanks. And I could tell by the imagery that it was obviously a protest at the aquarium, and I hated that place. I hated captivity, and I was seeking more purpose in my life. I was a bit of a party animal back then, and I felt quite empty. And so I thought, this is it. I'm going to go, and these are going to be my people. I'm so excited. This is exactly what I needed to find. Not realizing that while I thought they were my people, they wouldn't have thought I was theirs, because I showed up wearing a leather purse and leather boots and makeup tested on animals, and I was there to fight for the freedom of the animals, and I wasn't even vegan. So it's pretty funny to think back at myself then. But something interesting happened. There was hundreds of activists there that day, and I stood there and I read all their signs, and I listened to a woman on the megaphone talking about the history of the aquarium, giving me so many more reasons to dislike them. Her name was Annalise, and she was the head of No Whales in Captivity. She's a wonderful lady.
We love Annalise.
Yes, a dear friend of mine now, but didn't know her until that day. And there was a fellow in the crowd named Taylor Freeman, and I just love him so much. I tear up every time I think about what he did for me. I recognized him, and I didn't know where I knew him from, and he came up to me after the protest, and he said, "Hi, Jen." And I said, "How do I know you?" And he said, "Well, we met on Plenty of Fish a few years ago." We didn't actually meet in person. We had a couple phone calls, and I remember his activism was sort of prominent on his profile, and I was feeling probably threatened by that, because I thought of myself as the biggest animal lover in the world. But now that I would be, you know, potentially hanging out with someone who was actually doing more than me, who was vegan and an activist, I could no longer see myself in that way. And I have to think that looking back on that, I probably avoided having any dates with him because of that. And I say this so that others can see themselves in me. I wasn't ready to address my speciesism. And then here I am a couple years later, serendipitously, there he is in the crowd. And we reconnected and we hung out, and I said, "I'm ready. How do I go vegan?" And he said, "Well, watch the Earthlings documentary." I'd never heard of it. I said, "I bet that's a bunch of slaughterhouse footage. I'm not watching that." And he said, "But you're paying for it." And I thought to myself, yeah, the least I can do is witness what I have the privilege of not having my body go through based on the choices that I'm making that causes that to happen to the animals. So I watched it that night. He stayed on the phone with me. I wanted to scream. I wanted to punch the people in the documentary that were harming the animals. But then I realized I gave them the job. You know, I was the one paying for those products. I recommend the Earthlings documentary to anyone who's not vegan yet. It's really hard to watch, but by the end of it, I think you'll be completely transformed and save so many animals. And so that's my vegan story. And then somehow, Allison, you found out about me using my dating profiles to get people to watch that film, and you reached out to me. You wanted to interview me on Animal Voices. So I came on as a guest,
yeah,
talking about that.
You're talking about Tindervism?
Yeah, I called it Tindervism. It was activism on Tinder. And I didn't even want to go on dates with people. I was just using Tinder as a way to get those discussions going in a world where animal use is normalized. I wanted to change that conversation, and it was actually pretty effective.
And I thought you were such an effective storyteller that we had to have you as a regular host on the show. And if listeners are interested in hearing that episode, just go onto our website, animalvoices.org, and search Tindervism.
Tindervism. And a lot of people that I went on dates with are now vegans and activists.
And that's true.
Yeah.
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 Jen does not lie about that. That's true.
If they did show some willingness to go vegan, I would actually go on a date with them, even though at that time I wasn't seeking a partner in my life. But yeah, that was cool.
Just another form of vegan outreach. We always talk about using your strengths to advocate for animals, and Jen's is through meeting them on dates.
Not anymore. Still, but right? There's okay. So many ways that you can do activism. So let's get into that discussion a bit. And Daniel, I want to come to you because you've only been vegan since October, and you've really dived right into this. You came out before Christmas with a few of us, including Michael here, and we were giving away vegan turkeys made by Gardein, which is the brand that I really love to recommend. They were paid for by PETA. Thank you for the $1,000, PETA. We bought 100 of them. And we had computer screens showing the slaughter of turkeys, and then we were providing a humane option for people. So why don't you tell us about that experience?
Yeah, so we first started right outside the No Frills on 4th Avenue, and then we moved to where there was more foot traffic along the waterfront. And what surprised me was that the people most affected were actually kids. They'd look at the slaughterhouse footage, and you know that there was something connecting inside their heads. And people always wonder about what humane slaughter looks like, and the video we were showing was exactly that. Something that was so inhumane that kids would almost cry when they see it. The video was very graphic. It was, I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about
it. You can
about.
Say anything at all, just don't swear.
Yep. No, the turkey was getting its throat slit, and then you could see it just convulsing, trying to get out of this hellish situation. Mm-hmm. And these people, the video that we were showing wasn't actually any type of activism. It was a video where they were trying to promote what they were doing at a turkey slaughterhouse.
It was a homestead farm.
Yes, that was it.
Yeah.
Michael, so, tell us a bit more about the video because you're the one that found that.
Right. So the videos that I like to show, including at this event, are not factory farm videos. In most cases, they're videos released by the farmers themselves because they are operating on these so-called small family farms that everyone likes to think their meat comes from. And they're showing the so-called proper way to slaughter and process a turkey. They use all these euphemisms for killing. And I found that these videos are the most terrifying videos to watch because they show an individual animal losing their life for a reason that essentially is not necessary at all. And the important part is this is an animal, an individual. And when we look at the factory farm footage, like in Dominion, for example, it's easy to forget that every single one of those animals we see is an individual who values their life as much as we value ours. And we're taking it for no good reason whatsoever.
Yeah, I want to say funny, but it's not funny. I just think it's so strange that these farmers put out these videos going, look how much we love and care for our animals as they slit their throats. And I think, well, what if we were to trade your child for the animal? Like, how would that look if we put your child in place of the animal? Oh, they have a really good life up until now, and this is just one bad day. They love to say, it's just one bad day. Right?
I mean, that was like a prominent thing. Even here in Vancouver, there was a farm exhibit, and they always promote this one bad day idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a long time, I was trying to convince myself that that was the only type of meat I would want to eat was like the one bad day. At least they had a good life. At least they had this. At least they had that. And then you realize that there's no such thing as humane slaughter. You can't humanely take something that, you know, they didn't want to give.
Exactly. And, you know, I was just like that before I went vegan. I would go to Whole Foods and I would spend extra money on they had these, I don't know if they still do it, but they had these levels of cruelty, I call it now, but it was like, mm-hmm. I don't know, stage 1 to 5, cage free and grass roaming and whatever else. And I felt good about myself spending the extra money that I really couldn't even afford to make sure that the animals, what I thought they died in a humane way too. I didn't ask any questions though. And that was who I used to be. I thought, well, if I don't ask, then I can't know and I can't be responsible. And I was a really dishonest person, right? And I think we can all look back on that and see how we were kind of dishonest.
I was definitely very dishonest.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking about this, but I legitimately thought that cows just produced milk without calves. They just spawned milk.
And most people did, so don't feel silly. But I remember being on road trips as a kid with my family, and we'd be in the country, and I would say, what kind of cows are those? Beef cows, dairy cows. The speciesism, you know, those are animals serving a purpose, and which purpose do they serve? And that was as far as I thought about it. I do remember asking my dad how they were killed when I was a kid. And he said a bolt gun to the head. And I thought, well, that sounds quick. All right. And then we need the meat. We have to have the protein. Mm-hmm. No, we don't. We didn't know that either, right? Yeah. So why don't you explain to our listeners what you've learned about the dairy industry? Because you've done
quite a
detail. What would you say to your former self now if you could speak to him about what you've learned about the dairy industry?
It's absolutely vile. One of the most surprising statistics is that they have a lobbying group that just tries to advertise milk, but they promote themselves as a organization that researches and tries to find all the benefits to drinking milk. The reality is they have around $13 million in annual budget, and they spend $12 million of that on just advertising, and only about $100,000 on research. So for a lobbying group that is supposed to be doing research, they really are just advertising. It's really awful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just in BC. That's not even the other Ontario branch or the other provinces.
And let's talk about what you learned about how milk is actually made, because the cows aren't just full of milk.
Well, what happens is a dairy cow is forcibly impregnated about once every year. And after they have a minimum waiting period where they allow the calf to drink the mother's milk, 6 weeks. After that, they take the calf away and the mom is milked for the next 8 months. And then they only get a 6 week waiting period before they get forcibly impregnated again.
Mm-hmm.
And then that cycle continues. And it's just, what an awful process to go through.
What happens to the calves that are taken away?
Oh, yes. The fun part where they all get killed for veal.
The males.
Yeah.
And the females are future milk slaves like their mothers.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to the dairy cows after they're too old to produce enough milk to be profitable?
Yeah, they actually have a statistic for this. I forgot the exact number, but after a number of years, when the amount of milk decreases, they will just kill them off. And it's a very short amount of time. It's
5 years.
Yeah, something like 5 years.
When they normally would live 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they are meat then. So
yeah.
when vegetarians say that they are not supporting the meat industry because it's cruel, well, if you're consuming dairy products and eggs, you are supporting the meat industry. They don't waste anything. They turn those exploited animals who are exploited for their reproductive systems into more profit, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the broiler chickens that you'll see in grocery stores were former egg layers, very tortured souls, very, very sick bodies. I just say that just to gross people mm-hmm. out, because you wouldn't want to be eating anything like that. But or anyone like that. Let's stop calling animals things. That's part of our speciesism and our brainwashing that we were all raised with, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, I found the leap from going vegetarian to full vegan a lot easier than just going vegetarian. There's just so much more suffering that happens in the egg and dairy industry that I couldn't stomach it. If I was willing to go vegetarian for moral reasons, there was absolutely no reason why I wouldn't go vegan.
I wish everybody could hear what you say. And I know so many vegetarians who I've spoken this truth to after they've told me they're vegetarian for ethical reasons. And a lot of them pretend I didn't say it, or they get mad, or they say I'm being pushy, or they say they're on a journey. And I think, well, how many years or decades have you been on this journey? I mean, let's be honest here, you're not on a journey. You're comfortable where you are, and you don't care as much as you say you do. And that is truthfully what I see with a lot of vegetarians. And I was the same way myself. So if I can say it about myself, I hope people can do some honest self-reflection and evolve like all of us did. None of us are born vegan. Most vegans are not born vegan. We allowed people at some point in our lives to speak truth to us. We allowed ourselves to reevaluate what we thought were facts. And we made ethical changes in our lives for the better.
Most
it's really not that hard.
Jen, I just want to say you got a lot of hearts from saying that just now on Instagram Live. Don't worry, you're not on camera, but
I love you back. Yeah, thank you.
So you can watch us on Instagram Live, Animal Voices. There's more hearts coming.
And Michael was going to say something.
Well, most importantly, the people who made the change are people who really put their egos aside, who realized that they are not so important that their journey should require an animal to die because they prefer a cheeseburger over any of the plant-based food they could consume instead. And I've been trying to understand the difference between someone who would go vegan and someone who wouldn't. And there's really no fundamental difference, but a big part of it is willing to accept and understand and think about what your actions are doing to others, even if those others are very different from you, even if they're very far away from you, even if you will never meet them, even if they are not in a position to thank you for sparing them. The vegan is somebody who considers the consequences their actions have on the animals.
Yeah, I like what you said about the ego. I find most of the major issues in the world are a result of humans and their egos. And we all have one to some degree, but I really am imploring people to look at themselves very honestly. Don't tell vegans that they're attacking you when they're giving you facts, because they're not attacking you. And if we want to use the word attack in a more realistic way, the animals are being attacked for your choices. And just knock it off, please.
Knock it off, everyone. It off. So just think about that for 3 minutes, everyone, while we play some stuff for you here.
Are you filming us?
I said you're on Instagram Live. That's really funny. You just got a bunch of hearts for that, Jen. People love it. Okay, we're going to take a 3-minute break here.
This is your big chance, so don't blow it.
We're here to present the cutting edge radio you want to hear. What about a program featuring just local Vancouver bands?
No market for that.
We have an expert on gospel music.
No.
Our public affairs programs dig deep with voices other stations won't touch.
No.
Programs with First Nations hosts?
Sorry, no market for that.
We've got a lot of shows in other languages for people all over the world. Folk music?
You're kidding, right? Who would sponsor that?
Can't make big bucks with programs people want to hear? You have to go to Co-op Radio for that. Community-owned radio. Now at 100.5 FM. The switch is on.
Greater Vancouver Food Bank has been providing support for our cities for almost 40 years and has been vital to helping thousands of community members through the COVID-19 crisis. To find out how you might benefit from the Greater Vancouver Food Bank's services, or to learn how you might donate money or volunteer your time, please visit their website at foodbank.bc.ca.
You are listening to the Animal Voices show on 100.5 FM CFRO on Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
All right, now we're back on Animal Voices and we're speaking with three vegans in the studio. Jen, take it from here.
Well, actually, I'd like to focus on some of the work that Michael does. He's a dedicated volunteer at Rabbitats Rescue. And just before we go into that, we're going to acknowledge that we have a holiday weekend coming up. And most holidays, unfortunately, revolve around killing animals. I don't know why that is. And I think we need to change that. Michael, why don't you touch briefly on your thoughts around the traditions of Easter? And what would you say to the religious community that believes that we need to stick with these traditions?
Well, I'll just start by saying I'm not religious or spiritual, But I have read the Bible, and based on the way I read it, it seems pretty clear that the people who wrote the Bible think that animals' purpose is to die for us when we want them to. And this is debatable. There's a documentary out that tries very hard to debate this, but religious people have eyes just like we do. And to understand an animal's purpose, we only need to observe how that animal acts when we try to harm them. Do they lay down when we try to cut their throats and let us do that? No. They fight for their lives just like we would, because they value their lives just like we do. So to kill an animal for a religious celebration because your holy book says it's their purpose, to that I just say, use your eyes. It's very obvious. I don't know, you know, there's translation issues. I don't know. I don't care. It's just from looking at how animals behave, it is clear that their purpose is not to die for a cheeseburger or for a celebration.
Or a leg of lamb this weekend, right? The traditional Easter dinner.
The lambs need their legs, mm-hmm. and that's not a joke.
Right.
It's for real.
Daniel wants to say something?
Oh, yeah. I mean, even in there's a Seventh-day Adventist sect or chapter that is actually fully vegan, and I believe that they have a pretty good interpretation of one of the passages. I think I don't remember it verbatim, but they said it's not yours for the taking, so don't take it. And I found that that's quite possibly the only religious chapter that I can accept a bit more. Yeah. I'm not religious myself either, but I feel like at least that chapter got it right.
And thou shalt not kill and do unto others. I don't know how that gets lost when it comes to slaughtering animals in the name of someone's God. Anyway, let's move on.
Oh, can I just say something here? Mm-hmm. So we have an Instagram listener, viewer, Angie DMT. They say there is a story about David where he eats only vegetables instead of the king's food, meat and wine, and he and his friends are stronger at the end of the story. And I also think there's actually many examples, I've studied this, of how Christianity does support veganism. I told my friend the other day, oh yeah, Jesus was a vegetarian. He's like, he was? Tell me more. And so I did some looking up, and we've talked about it before on the show, but we'll close it off at that.
When it comes to activism, yeah. It's not a topic I like to get into because I don't personally give any credit to any of these stories. So it's difficult for me to engage in these discussions. And I also find that a lot of dishonesty comes up and a lot of picking and choosing which practices to apply to oneself based on their own comfort level or desires. It sort of kicks in. But anyway,
and also there is a much more powerful reason to go vegan. Whether or not God says he wants you to go vegetarian, I don't know. But again, what's clear is that the animals don't want to be killed, and we don't need to kill them or otherwise exploit them for anything. There is not a nutrient that humans need that we can't produce in our own bodies that we can only get from eating meat or animal products. And if you want to disagree with me, please post on the Instagram page. Anything you come up with, I have an answer to.
Yeah, you're the best.
But in summary, everything that a human needs, they can get, not just from plants, but, you know, B12, for example, is produced by bacteria. We don't need to kill, and animals don't want us to kill them. They don't want us to take their calves away to take their milk. They don't want us to breed them and kill all the male chicks in a hatchery so we can get eggs.
If you want to know where to get all your nutrients on a plant-based diet, there's a really good book written by a local couple of dietitians, Vicento Molina and Brenda Davis. It's called Becoming Vegan. It's the best resource. And they also actually put on a lot of speaking events around here.
I just want to do a quick shout-out to Live For Bakery, because they're watching the Instagram. And we were just talking about you to Live
Hi,
For
Aaron.
In
Hi,
Aaron. Ireland.
We love you.
We were just talking about how I had that amazing funfetti birthday cake as just a random dessert at our podcast last week, and we love you, so thanks for tuning in.
And Aaron, thank you for the box of palmiers that you gave to our lovely friend Jody, who's a super hardcore animal rights activist. Aaron found out it was Jody's birthday last week and filled a box of Jody's favorite treats from the bakery.
Thank you.
So Michael, let's talk about your work with Rabbitats.
Right, so Rabbitats is a animal sanctuary. Well, it's exclusively a rabbit sanctuary. And the reason they are focused on helping rabbits is because they are the most neglected pet in Vancouver. You don't have to go very far to see a feral colony of rabbits. Now, these are not wild rabbits. These are pet rabbits that people have gotten maybe as an Easter gift. Easter is a very bad time for rabbits. So they get them for their kids as a gift. They realize that rabbits take more work, or the kid just gets bored of them, or the parents get bored of them. And then they think they're doing the rabbit a favor by setting them free. Well, for one, this is illegal. But for two, more importantly, this is not these rabbits' natural environment. It's very far from their natural environment. And so these rabbits are not doing well. It might look like there's a lot of them, but if you get up close to them, you see that they are starving. And so Rabbitats has come up with kind of a unique solution. They realize, so I just want to say, I'm not officially speaking for Rabbitats. I just volunteer there. So, you know, apologies to Sorrel if I say something incorrect. But Rabbitats has a unique approach to solving this problem, well, to mitigating this problem. And that is not necessarily to try to adopt out every single rabbit, but to house these rabbits in communal colonies, in open spaces that mimic their natural environment as closely as they can, where they are provided with food, water, and everything else they need, and veterinary care. They're all spayed and neutered, but about 12 to 20 of them share these spaces at a time. And this is their long-term home. It's not the intent for many of these rabbits to be adopted. Now, a lot of rabbits, for one reason or another, can't be put into colonies, and for that reason, we are desperately searching for people to adopt rabbits and provide them proper homes, which means free run of the house, not putting them in a cage of any size. Ideally, they will have free run of a room or the whole house, or a little bit less ideally, in a large pen.
And they are litter trained, in case this is the first thing that comes to your mind.
Yeah, they naturally use a litter box like a cat does. If you're vegan, the rabbit is naturally vegan too.
Michael, I'm curious just to know, I've just been hearing about having like free roaming rabbits recently. Why is it important that they're free roaming?
For the same reason it's important not to put a person in a cage.
Well said.
Yeah, they don't want to be confined. They're not a decoration. They're not a toy. They are a living being that has their own reason for living, and they want to explore and live their lives just like we would.
And be stimulated in their environment.
Yeah, so if you go to a pet store and you see they sell rabbit products, large rabbit cage, know that is absolutely not okay for a rabbit, even though it has a picture of a rabbit on it.
They are prisons.
Michael, tell me from your experience, what is it like to have a bunny hopping around your place? Like, what is that like to live with a bunny hopping around your place?
I have recently announced my resignation at my current job and have gotten another job that would keep me at home, because I love being with my rabbit so much. The best part of every day is coming home and the rabbits come up to me just like dogs would and petting them. I can't sleep at night unless I hear the sound of them munching on their hay.
I thought you were going to say munching on your toes at night.
No, they don't.
Or on your hair.
Have to rabbit-proof your house, though. They do love to chew everything.
Some rabbits, yeah. Some are better than others. Be ready to secure your wires. They like chewing wires.
Is it a thing where if you provide them with enough things to chew, they just chew on wires less?
No, the reason they chew on wires is because in nature, they burrow, and when they see roots, you know, like tree roots, grass roots, anything, they will chew the roots, not because they you know, gain nourishment from them, but because they don't want the roots invading their territory. So they actually see wires as kind of a low-level threat to themselves, and that's why they chew on wires. But the thing is, Rabbitats needs all the help they can get. They're currently closed for intake, which means that they used to go around collecting the feral rabbits and accepting rabbits that people surrender. They will do that from time to time in extreme emergencies, but Rabbitats is full and they need more money. They need more volunteers. It is basically the place where all of the neglect that is placed on all of the rabbits all over Vancouver and the lower mainland is focused into. So you can go to Rabbitats to see the result of all of that. And we're doing our best. We've just set up 2 new colony spaces. We set up 5 new colony spaces last summer. And to me, it is one of the happiest moments in the world where we take these rabbits that have been in a cage for so long, for such a large portion of their lives, and we open the carrier and they run out in their new colonies and they meet all their new friends that they're going to share the space with and they start burrowing. This is the purpose of my life used to be to study physics. I can pretty confidently say that this is my new purpose now.
That's nice. So a lot of people say to us activists, why do you spend your time helping animals when there are other issues?
Veganism, animal decency, is a unique issue. It is not a political issue. And by that I mean the harm done to animals is done because normal people demand for it to be done. When an animal is killed in a slaughterhouse, it is because somebody has bought a piece of meat and there's an empty space on a shelf that needs to be replaced. When I say it's not a political issue, I really mean that. I don't think it is useful at this stage, and I don't think it might never be useful, to ask politicians or to pressure companies to somehow make things better to animals. Because by doing that, a politician knows that they will lose votes if they do anything to reduce the availability or to increase the cost of what most people consider food. So, if you want to save lives, the first step is for you to go vegan. That means you will no longer be the reason an animal is slaughtered. Secondly, you need to convince other people to go vegan. And there is no step 3. It is that simple. I used to be involved in political action. I used to go, you know, do the marches, do the pressure campaigns, go to vigils outside of slaughterhouses. I realized that the only way to save a life is to convince somebody that they need to stop being the reason that these lives are taken. And I want to emphasize a life, because if you see the goal in your activism as smashing all of animal agriculture, you're not going to be an activist for very long. It's very obvious, not just here in Vancouver, but everywhere all over the world, activism, especially animal rights activism, has gotten a lot less popular. Attendance is down everywhere. And I think a big part of the reason is that people didn't see things happening the way they thought it would. We thought we'd be able to take a sledgehammer and just break down the slaughterhouses, break down the whole industry, but we're not going to see that. We definitely won't see it in our lifetimes. We probably won't ever see it. And what's worse, we're seeing meat consumption go up year after year. But the fact remains that there are lives that can be saved. There are people that, if you introduce to the very simple fact that they don't need to kill or maim or exploit animals to get everything they need to thrive, they will make the choice to go vegan. And
I have a couple questions, Michael, on that. So I was just listening to our friends at Our Hen House on their podcast last week, and they were saying how people who are activists, maybe this was animal justice, they were saying how people who are activists, 50% burn out and quit and never go back. You know, we're also seeing in the news this week how the level of, I wonder if there's a correlation here, how the level of school attendance in schools has really gone down during the pandemic. And maybe I wonder, sort of, you know, where it went down for activism, I find, in Vancouver, because we weren't allowed out anywhere, right? I'm wondering, do you find that since then it just has not, was that a catalyst? Since then it just hasn't come back.
I don't know. I started seeing a decline before COVID, honestly. If you look at the size of the marches we had in 2018 and 2019, 2018 especially, we could close down like half of downtown with the march to close all slaughterhouses. But yeah, it's not just animal rights activism. I think people are losing hope in many aspects. And I see veganism as a source of hope. If you pay attention to the individual mission, which is to save as many lives as you can, and every life that you save, not just spare, because when you go vegan, you spare lives, but when you get other people to go vegan, you save lives. And even if all of the activism you do for your whole life, even if that means just one person goes vegan, that's thousands of lives saved. And even if that wasn't the case, even if it was just one animal that gets saved for one person going vegan, that would be worth it. Because That's a whole life. That's a whole world, a whole way of seeing the universe. Think about how much you value your life. And yeah, animals are different from us in many reasons, but they're the same in the reasons that are important. The chief among them is the value that they have on their own existence.
And also, when someone else goes vegan, they're influencing so many other people in their lives by having meals with them and hearing why they're vegan, and you are planting seeds. I want to go back to what you said about the decline in activism. I can speak to that personally. I get so burned out. My dystopia gets so bad some days. I'm going to be very honest here. I want to leave this world. And I know many activists feel the same way. And for those of you who don't know what dystopia means, with a V, not a D, it's a term coined by an Australian psychologist who's vegan and who had a lot of vegan clients. And she was seeing a pattern in this existential dread that they were feeling in having their eyes open to how we treat animals in this world and thinking optimistically that they would tell people in their lives who they previously knew to be compassionate and logical people, and those people would change. And it doesn't go that way. It's really surprising. And Daniel, maybe you can even speak to that yourself. It's quite discouraging to see that people who we did think were compassionate and logical sometimes become quite defensive.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just my girlfriend, my lovely girlfriend, and I, we're both from a Chinese family where we grew up eating a lot of meat, and that was actually like a part of our culture. It's a sign of wealth. And so when we told our family members that we were going vegan, they were mostly surprised. One question my mom even asked me was, why do you want to look like you're poor? It was just one of those questions that we always associated it. And when I tried to bring up why I became vegan to them, as well as my friends and even coworkers, I get these derisive comments. Just kind of the things I used to say, like, oh, where are you going to get your protein? All these questions that if you take 20 minutes to look online, where it's so easy to find information, you don't have those questions anymore. You can just get everything you need from a well-balanced plant-based diet.
And you will look for the answers once you mm-hmm. make yourself look at things from the animal's point of view. When you're in the grocery store and you're deciding, what should I buy? Should I buy the piece of meat, or should I buy the lentils or the tofu, mm-hmm. or you know, whatever it is you want? Don't just think about how it will taste. Even if vegan food was much worse than it really is, even if we didn't have all these options.
Vegan food's amazing. He kind of made it sound like worse than it is. It is delicious.
Yeah, but even if that wasn't true, okay, hypothetically, even if that wasn't true, you have to compare the difference in the experience that you will have from eating the vegan food and the meat and whatever to the experience that the animal will have. And yeah, it might be a small difference from you. There are consequences. Going vegan is a choice that will affect you for your entire life. And this is scary for some people. But you have to think of the bigger picture. You have to think about what you're causing, what you're forcing others to go through by not being vegan. And think about that every time you have the choice to make in what you will eat next.
And when people say that vegans are forceful, I love to point out, have you even considered the impact of your force on animals?
I wish we were forceful. I wish there was a way to force people to go vegan,
yeah.
to force people to stop harming others,
yeah,
but there's not, and it's impossible for us to be forceful. You have the power. You, the person deciding what you're going to eat, you're the one who's holding the knife. You have the power over whether an animal lives or dies or is exploited. The power is yours. We're not forcing anything. You have the choice as to whether you force an animal to live or force an animal to die or to allow them to live.
Mm-hmm. Our viewer, Angie DMT, says they vote with their tofurkey dollars.
Yeah.
Should do that.
But see, it's a lot more powerful than voting. This is what I meant when I said it's not political. When you vote for a politician, it's very indirect, the effect that you have. When you vote for a bylaw or whatever, that might pass, that might not pass. Your politician might get elected, they might not get elected. But when you decide that you're not going to buy a piece of meat, that you're going to eat plant-based instead, you are saving a life. You are directly making such a huge difference for some animal somewhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so different about this. That's why I resent the mixture of animal rights activism and politics, any kind of politics. People say it's aligned with progressivism, whatever. You don't have to be progressive to be vegan. You can be conservative. You can be a Trump supporter. I don't care. You can be whatever thing I disagree with. I don't give I don't care. I almost forgot we were
good
on
job
air.
Not staying
yeah
there.
But this is the most important thing, because this is something that you personally have direct control over. You can choose whether killing or sparing a life happens every single time you eat a meal.
It is just such an easy thing to do, especially these days. I always tell people I actually gained weight going vegan because I became such a food lover. And before, I kind of just ate just to sustain myself. I really didn't have a lot of creativity in the kitchen. I thought, which of the four basic meats am I going to eat and which side vegetable am I going to eat? It was pretty boring and limited. And I'll be honest, it contributed to my depression because I wasn't taking care of myself well. And since going vegan, I'm going to say it, I'm going to brag, I've become a fabulous cook. And I eat more than I should because it is so good. And there's so many great restaurants that have vegan options. There's full vegan restaurants. There's To Live For Bakery, which is too close to my house for my comfort zone. Let's talk about if anyone's inspired today to go vegan, let's give people some resources. Definitely the Earthlings documentary is worth another mention. It's free on Vimeo.com. Yes, it's hard to watch, but imagine if in 90 minutes you were a completely different person. I mean, I would say that's quite a selling point for the film. Have you seen it, Daniel?
I have not, and I told myself if I ever have any doubts that I would force myself to watch it.
Yeah.
And like, one of the reasons I don't watch it is because I know what's happening and I'm horrified by what's happening. So if I ever have any slip up, I'll force myself to watch it. Yeah. To remember exactly why I'm doing this.
Right. And you don't need to watch it because you've already made the change.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about a resource that you found that you think would be helpful for someone that's thinking of going vegan after hearing our discussion.
I personally found that having a good cookbook goes a long way. Because when you are at home and you've made that decision and you have a completely different list of groceries that you didn't have like a week ago, you have no idea how to cook them. You need to look online. Or you could have a book that just gives you every step of the way, everything that's vegan, easily accessible in your own kitchen. That helped us do that transition very smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
Noticing what can be removed very easily, noticing entire food groups, like breakfast, for example. You don't need to have your cereal with milk. You don't need to have your scrambled eggs. You could just have peanut butter and jam sandwich.
Or you can have plant milk and still have your cereal, right? And you could have just egg, which is a fantastic mung bean based egg product. And I would love to do a test where I serve just egg to professional chefs and tell them it's real eggs.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you they would all think it was real eggs. Have you tried those yet?
Yes, I love them.
So good. There's the liquid form and there's the frozen patty that you can just put in the toaster oven. It's like a fried egg alternative. Michael, resources?
Your own brain.
Brain is as wealthy as yours, Michael.
No, but this is one thing I kind of want to change about how we do activism. I've never watched any of these documentaries. I've never watched Dominion or Earthlings. When I went vegan, there wasn't Just Egg. And the thing is, it's really simple. It's if you don't want to be the reason animals are killed or put through the most horrible exploitation, the only choice is to go vegan. And, you know, there's Google. You can find a way. Whatever your dietary preferences are, there's a way to... Like, there are many things that you can't completely replicate using plant-based methods. That might change in the future. It might not. I don't know. I don't care. But what is true is that any flavor or any texture individually you can replicate with veganism. And they've been doing this for thousands of years in vegetarian societies. But the thing is, if you realize the true reason to go vegan, which is basic decency towards animals, you will find a way. And that's it. I don't have any documentaries or cookbooks to recommend. I just need people... The animals need you to understand the philosophy of treating them with basic decency, and everything else will come into play. But that's the first challenge. And I think we need to focus on that, because every time I tell people this, that you individually have a choice to as to what happens to an animal, it's the first time they've heard this. They've heard about the health benefits before. They've heard about the environmentalism. They know that there are vegan options. But so few people have really thought about the core vegan conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, animals deserve to be treated better than you're treating them.
I hear your frustration, and I validate it. I get it. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I do know people that won't go vegan unless you hold their hand through every step of it. And I say to them, I'm busy rescuing animals. I don't just eat vegan and live a vegan lifestyle by avoiding cruelty to animals. I am actively rescuing, and I'm really busy. And do you really want me to take the time to help you Google things? But they do. They need it, and it's annoying.
But there are plenty of people who are better than they are, and we need to be more broad.
Well, that's where I was going with this, is people only care as much as they do. And so sometimes then you have to talk about health or the environment, about things
that are not about the animal.
I'm not justifying it. I'm letting you know how it goes sometimes.
But this is the reason that we do the Cube of Truth. This is the reason we show the videos out in public, because we are searching for the people who have the inherent decency to be good for animals.
And we're not going to waste time
with the people who don't, because there are plenty of people who do who haven't been reached with this conversation
yet.
And
this is why I don't go to those events anymore, and you know this, because it drives me crazy to meet so many people who don't care. It is a great event.
But once in a while, you meet somebody who does. And that's why we're doing this radio program. I hope that one person listening is that person who has the decency to make the change. And you will do it right now, because as long as you wait, every day that you continue eating meat, dairy, eggs, whatever, you're causing more animals to die. And you have to ask yourself, how many more animals do I want to be killed for meat? Should it be 1,000? Should it be 3? Is 1 okay, or should it be 0?
Right.
The answer is obvious.
I do wish people cared more than they do, and thank you for your relentless enthusiasm to continue putting on these Anonymous for the Voiceless outreach events. And they are actually quite heartwarming when things are going our way with them, when we meet some compassionate people that are transformed. We do have to close out soon. So, Michael, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about an event that you were mentioning here.
Right. So we mentioned Rabbitats earlier. They are having an Easter Bunny Fest this Sunday, March 31st. At 11:30 to 4:30 at Lulu Island Winery. That's at 16880 Westminster Highway in Richmond. If you're interested in helping rabbits, in my opinion, it is the most good your labor can do. This is a great way to get introduced to them. But if you just want to take your kids to meet the rabbits or meet the rabbits yourself, that's a good opportunity to do that as well. Yeah, and otherwise, please volunteer at Rabbitats. Go to Google, search for Rabbitats, Rabbitats. We need all the help we can get. And honestly, I've done a lot of cool things in my life. I think shoveling crap at Rabbitats is one of the most important things I've ever done. So come help the rabbits. They need all the help we can get.
Don't take your kids to the aquarium or the zoo. Take them to actually interact with animals who need help. Well, the ones at the aquarium and the zoo definitely need help, but they need people cutting the bars open. So let's wrap up the show. I just want to let you know what's on next week's show. We're going to do an interview with an activist from Toronto who I love very much, Mary Chris Staples. She is fostering a recently rescued sled dog who spent their life on a chain, as most sled dogs do. Baladi Dog Rescue is the registered not-for-profit Canadian organization originating in 2021, and they see the need and desperation that rescue community is under and try to help as many animals as possible. They originated helping street dogs from Egypt and now sled dogs in Canada. And so recently, 55 sled dogs have been released into foster care. Well, they're still looking for some foster families. So if you can help, please look up BaladiDogRescue.com, and you can go on their Facebook page and see all the pictures of the beautiful dogs. And we'll talk more about that next week. But in the meantime, I know they need all the help they can get. So please do check out BaladiBaladi DogRescue.com.
And I just wanted to give some of my own resources as well. First of all, hello to Dr. Matthew Nagra. He has joined the Instagram, and he's a great resource, isn't he? So please.
Oh, I'm such a huge fan. Your just
Sorry, I watched a lot of your videos when I was during my transition, and when I found out you're in Vancouver, I was like, one day I have to meet him. But okay, anyway, sorry.
Well,
sorry.
Dr. Nagra, we just had an event with him. So go to his Instagram. That's a great resource, Dr. Matthew Nagra. Also, I want to say for people who don't know what to eat, join the 21-Day Vegan Kickstart. It's a free program brought to you by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. And there's other programs too, the Animal Justice Academy, all free, veganuary.com, all free.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 100.5 FM Vancouver Co-op Radio on unceded and ancestral Tsleil-Waututh, Musqueam, and Squamish territories in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Please check us out on Facebook, Animal Voices Vancouver, and on Instagram as well. And you can hear all of our past archive shows on our website at animalvoices.org and on Google Play and Apple Podcasts. We are closing here with a song today. It's called Sweet Darling by Fiji. Stay tuned next for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.
We've been together a while, and I don't mean to cramp your style. Sometimes I wonder just how things happen this way. And I'm just reminiscing of that one cold night we once spent. You'd pick me up every to leave for the